So I'm going to take up in December the 5th, 1916, the good that the soul who lives in the divine will does. I was doing my meditation according to my usual way. I was that's what she does every day. So I was pouring all of myself into the will of my sweet Jesus. That's like saying to Jesus, I fuse all of me in all of you. So I often say that to him. I fuse all of me in all of you all the time. Okay. I was pouring all of myself in the will of my sweet Jesus. In the meantime, I saw an engine before my mind, which contained innumerable fountains, which poured waves of water, light, and fire. And rising up to heaven, these would pour on all souls. There was no soul that was not inundated with these waves. The only difference was that for some, they entered inside, while for others, they stayed outside. In other words, some people are disposed to receive and others are not yet disposed. And Jesus told me, my daughter, I am the engine. So you should have a capital E on that engine. And my love keeps the engine in motion and pours over everyone. Now notice that he is completely universalist. God loves everybody the same as everybody else. But for those who want to receive these ways, if they are empty and they love me, they enter into them while the others who are just touched in order to be disposed to receive such a good. Now, notice that we are an empty space in which God will work. Okay, so I want to give you Ephesians 2:10 for that. We are God's work of art, created in Christ Jesus. We are a space. That's why we have to go into our nothingness. Not because the Lord wants to humiliate us or even that we want to humiliate ourselves. It's that we want to become a place where the Lord can create. And he creates out of nothing, you see. So, as for souls who do my will and live in it, those are living in the divine will, then they are inside the engine itself. Now, the first two groups are outside of the engine and some of them are open to let the graces pour into them and some of them only need to be disposed. They're not yet ready. But if you live in the divine will, you're already inside of the engine itself. And since they live from me, they can dispose the waves that gush out for the good of others and are now light that illuminates, fire that ignites, and water that purifies. So you become the light, you become the water, you become the fire. So you become the light, that's Matthew 5, and I think it's verse 14 or 17. I think I'll put down 17. You are the light of the world, do you remember?
Yes.
Okay. Fire that ignites. In other words, if there's fire in your belly, it will give life to others. Water that purifies. Water is a symbol of the living waters of grace. How beautiful it is to see these souls who live in my will or in my will coming out from within my engine like as many other little engines diffusing themselves for the good of all. Now notice, for those of us living in the divine will, that he is our everything. We're coming out of him, and that's why we can do good for others. And then they return into the engine and disappear from the midst of creatures, and they live from me and me alone. Now notice that life in the divine will is a life of union with God. We're living for him alone. And we come out of him to do good for others. Okay, so I want to give you Galatians 2:20. I no longer live. It is Christ who lives in me. So December the 9th, 1916, Jesus wants to find himself and what he did in the soul. So to find himself and his works in the soul. With this intention, the soul must do the hours of the passion and every other action. Okay, so this is a very important message. Louisa said, I was afflicted because of the privations of my sweet Jesus. And if he comes, while I breathe a little bit of life, I am left more afflicted in seeing him more afflicted than I am. He doesn't want to hear about placating himself because the people are forcing him and they snatch more scourges from him. But while he scourges, he also cries over the lot of man. Why does he scourge? Because he's got to put a correction into the system. Why does he cry over the lot of man? That is not his will. And he doesn't want this awful relationship with the human race. He has done everything to create us and to save us and to give us life. And so Louisa said, he hides deep within my heart. He hides deep within the heart of anyone who lives in the divine will, so as not to see what man suffers. It seems that one can no longer live in these sad times. Yet it seems that this is only the beginning. You see, it's still in the middle of World War I, 1914-18. And it's only the beginning. The Lord has already intimated there will be another world war. He didn't use those words, naturally enough. And as far as we know, there will be a third world war as well. So it's only the beginning. And when you go to the book of Revelation, there are three major waves of chastisement, and it seems to me that it's the three world wars. Okay. Then, as I was worried about my hard and sad lot of having to be so very often without Jesus, he came and throwing his arm around my neck, he said, my daughter, do not increase my pains by worrying. Now, don't forget that Jesus is speaking to her with the two of them literally inseparable. Okay. So if two things are inseparable, what happens to one happens to the other. So her worrying is worrying him. Her pains are increasing his pains. There are already too many, he said. I don't expect this from you. On the contrary, I want you to make my pains, my prayers, and all of myself your own. You see, we pray that way in the hours of the Passion. In such a way that I may find in you another me. So we associate with him, we follow, we repeat. Remember those words that Tony gave us? Associate, follow, and repeat. In these times, I want great satisfactions, in other words, during a world war. And only one who makes me their own can give them to me. It's only when we really fuse in the divine will and take Jesus's reparations and Jesus' sufferings, that we have something to give to God. We've nothing of our own. That which the Father found in me, which is glory, delight, love, satisfactions, whole and perfect, and for the good of all, I want to find in these souls. So for that, I want to give you John 14:12. My disciples will do the same works as I do when I go to the Father. And John 15:7. He wants his disciples to do the same. I want to find in these souls, like as many other Jesuses that match me. We have to be like him in everything. These intentions you must repeat in each hour of the Passion. Hence you have that prayer at the very beginning to fuse in the divine will and join in all of that Jesus is doing. But you have to do it in each action as well, in everything. So, if I don't find my satisfaction, it's all over for the world. Now, this is 1916. I can't even imagine how he feels now. I can't even imagine. We're in an infinitely worse situation. In other words, he needs as many people as possible in the divine will doing these reparations through the Passion for him, but fused with him in the divine will. The scourges will pour down in torrents. And then he said, ah, my daughter, and he disappeared. So there's the necessity for all of us to actually join forces and become an army of people in the divine will, fused with Jesus in his humanity, divinity and will, taking all of his satisfactions and all of his reparations and making them our own and offering them for the poor world that we're living in. And it's the sheer numbers of us that are required to do that. because we're not in the same position as Louisa. So December the 14th, 1916, Jesus slept and worked in order to give rest to souls in God. Louisa was offering her sleep to Jesus and saying to him, I take your sleep. This is a very good little prayer before you go to sleep. And I make it my own. And by sleeping with your sleep, I want to give you the contentment as if another Jesus was sleeping. It's short and sweet and to the point. Without letting me finish, he said, yes, my daughter, sleep with my sleep. I want to give you Psalm 127:2. So that in looking at you, I may reflect myself in you. In other words, Jesus may see himself in us. And as I gaze at myself, I might find all of myself in you, because you are sleeping with my sleep. In other words, your sleep isn't just the body resting. It isn't just the mind or the emotions resting. It's your very spirit is resting in God, and therefore it's an active spiritual reality that's there. And so as you gaze at yourself in me, we may be in accord in everything. I want to tell you why my humanity subjected itself to the weakness of sleep. Now notice, because he was divine, he calls it weakness. Because we're human and weak and all the rest of it, we call it an absolute necessity. It's a completely different matter altogether. We would be ill if we deprived ourselves of sleep, whereas for him it was completely different. Isn't it amazing? He said, my daughter, the creature was made by me, and as my own, I wanted to keep her on my lap, in my arms, in continuous rest. Now that is Psalm 131, verses 1 to 3. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. I've given you that many times, haven't I? I also want to give you Psalm 95, verse 11. Psalm 37, verse 7. And the call of Jesus in Matthew 11, 28 to 30, come to me, I will give you a rest. Okay, now that rest is your mind, your heart, your soul, your whole being in union with God. That's Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Okay. My soul was to rest in my will. The soul was to rest in my will and sanctity, to rest in my love, to rest in my beauty, my power, my wisdom, all these acts which constitute true rest. So what he's calling rest is not sleep. It is that you have found your origin and you have found your destiny. You have found everything when you touch the divine will and the sanctity of the divine will, when you touch divine love, beauty, power and wisdom. Now that actually requires contemplation. And we'll talk to you about that in our next gathering. All these acts which constitute true rest. But what sorrow. The soul escapes from my lap and trying to detach herself from my arms in which I hold her tight, she goes in search of vigil. Now, I thought the word vigil there was used wrongly. We use the word vigil to mean I am keeping vigil sort of all night before the Blessed Sacrament. That means I'm staying awake. That's not the way it's being used here. It means distractions, that you're paying attention to something that is not God and is not the divine will. So I want to give you Mark 6:31. People just don't want to know what the Lord is saying. So to let you know that I'm not misreading it, he then said, vigil are passions, sin, attachments, pleasures. Vigil are the fears, the anxieties, the agitations. In other words, the things that distract you from the will of God and the presence of God and bring you down and pull you down to a much lower level. Okay. So as much as I long for her and call her to rest in me, I'm not listened to. This is a great offense, an affront to my love, which the creature takes into no consideration, and she gives not a thought to repair for it. In other words, the creature doesn't have a clue what she or he is doing to themselves by allowing this to happen to them. This is why I wanted to sleep, in other words, to make reparation for our sleep. Every single thing that he did in his life was to redo all the things that we do wrong in our lives. And that's why we have a divine version of us in heaven, which we can claim. So this is why I wanted to sleep, he said, to give satisfaction to the Father for the rest which souls do not take in him, by repaying him for everybody. And while sleeping, I penetrated true rest for all, making myself, look at this, the vigil. I don't know why she suddenly got, or the translator suddenly got this word and is using it all over the place. Making myself the sentry of each heart. In other words, the one who takes care of you, in order to free them of the problems of sin. So there's the word vigil used wrong several times. Okay. So the Lord makes himself the sentry or the guard of our hearts to protect us from the distractions and the disaster of sin. And I so much love this rest of the soul in me that I not only wanted sleep, but I wanted to walk in order to give rest to her feet, work to give rest to her hands, palpitate and love to give rest to her heart. In sum, I wanted to do everything so that the soul might do everything in me and would take rest. Now, you see, rest there is that your whole being is resonating right in the center of God's will. And therefore, everything that is happening in that rest is actually totally life-giving. So it's not rest as in, you know, many people want to sleep to sort of forget stuff, to just sort of put off something until tomorrow. You know, tomorrow's another day. I'm going to sleep. Do you mind? Tomorrow's another day. So that's not that kind of thing at all. It's not sleep as in escape from anything. So this rest is something that you can do fully awake, fully alert, in prayer. And it is the most wonderful thing. And if you have never truly experienced it, instead of trying to put your head around it and work it out intellectually, the simplest solution is to find a place where you can be alone and be quiet and ask the Lord to let you experience this rest. Because when you experience it, you understand it. Whereas you could do all the talking from now until next year about it, and if you've not actually experienced it, you don't know that this is the solution to health of body, mind and spirit. It's us finding our center. It's the most wonderful thing. And medical science today has recognized that meditation is what they call anything to do with prayer, whether it is prayer or not. All kinds of stuff they call meditation. But they recognize that if a person becomes very quiet interiorly, that it is very health-giving for mind and body. Very health-giving. So the Lord wants us to take rest. But our rest is the child in its mother's arms. It's us in the arms of the Lord. So that I might do everything for her. You see the image there of the child again, that when the child is in the mother's arms, the mother is doing everything. The mother is thinking about everything that the child needs and all the rest of it. And the mother is being their protector and the guard and protects the child from all trouble. Well, the Lord wants us interiorly in that position so that he can mother us. Now, let me use that word. Is that okay? So that I might do everything for her, provided that I could keep her safe within me. Now, it's when we finally click in to that living in the divine will 24/7, 365, when we finally click into that, all of this comes your normal reality. Until then, you will experience it every now and then. So December the 22nd, 19:16. Everything that the soul does in the will of God, Jesus does together with her. This is terribly important. So if I fuse myself in the divine will and then do any prayer, he's praying with me, and it is very good for me to remember that, isn't it? Okay, so there's a very beautiful prayer here in the first paragraph. Having received communion, I was uniting all of myself. You see, I unite all of me with all of you. And pouring all of myself into his will. I said to him, I'm unable to do anything or say anything. Therefore, I feel the great need to do what you do and to repeat your own words. In your will, I find present and as though in act, the acts that you did in receiving yourself in the sacrament. Now, everything Jesus did, because he was divine and human, all those actions are all alive. We can plug into them anytime we like to receive the life that they give. So she wanted to enter into the acts that Jesus did in receiving himself in the Holy Eucharist. I want to make them my own, she said, and I want to repeat them for you. And it's a very important thing to do after receiving Holy Communion. So I tried to penetrate into everything which Jesus had done in receiving himself in the sacrament. And while I was doing this, he told me, my daughter, the soul who does my will, that is, live in the divine will, whatever she does in my will. She forces me to do whatever she does together with her. So if she receives communion in my will, I repeat the acts that I did in communicating myself. So notice the importance of fusing in receiving the Lord. And I renew the complete fruit of my sacramental life. Therefore, your act of receiving communion is absolutely vitally important. If she prays in my will, I pray with her, and I renew the fruit of my prayers. If she suffers, if she works, if she speaks in my will, I suffer with her, renewing the fruit of my pains. I work and speak in her, and I renew the fruit of my works and words, and so with all the rest. Isn't that wonderful? So the importance of fusing and letting the Lord repeat his life in us. I think that's absolutely marvellous. So December the 30th, we come to a very important message again. But as we go on, you'll hear me saying that each one of them is very important. How Jesus made us free in our will and in our love. Now, no matter how often you fuse, no matter how deep you are in communion with him, you are always free. And you see this continuously in the writings of Louisa. And so you come into those wonderful moments that I call moments in which they're having a tiff together. And then he says to her, you're free, you know. You can pull out of this anytime you like. That's the exact opposite for people who get into satanic worship. The moment Satan gets a grip on your will, he takes it, enslaves you, and you are no longer free. That's why exorcism is one of the very important ministries of the church, to free people, because the people getting into the occult have no idea. Even the ones who say they understand it and everything, they don't have an idea that from that instant they're not free. And the great gift that God has given to us is free will. But no matter how committed you are to the Lord, you are always free, always free. And therefore, he wants us to make continuous acts all the time. So, continue in my usual state, Louisa said, I was thinking about the pains of my lovable Jesus, offering my interior martyrdom united to the pains of Jesus. Now she gets 10 out of 10. Instead of complaining that life is very hard for her and everything, she's now united her martyrdom with the martyrdom of Jesus. Very important. No matter how small the pain you get in any part of your body, would you please connect it with the passion of Jesus? Gain his infinite merits. Fuse, raise it up to the divine level and offer it for souls. And you're doing an incredible good all the time. It's much better than paracetamol. So Jesus said, my daughter, my executioners were able to lacerate my body, insult me, trample upon me. But This needs to be underlined in green, white and gold. They could not touch either my will or my love. They could touch my body, but they couldn't touch the essence of me. Divine will and love is how you describe God. These I wanted free, so that like two currents that might run and run without anyone being able to hinder them, pouring myself out for the good of all and also for my very enemies. Now, I think it's in Maria Valtorta that Jesus explains something that's terribly important to me. Jesus explains that during the scourging, that he was completely still inside of himself. That became desperately important for me last January when I had the problem with the eye. Because I said, I now need to experience it. This complete stillness when there's something awful happening to you on the outside. And he gave it to me insofar as someone at my level could take it. And it made an incredible difference. I now know what he's actually talking about, this complete stillness. You can't touch my will and you can't touch my love. You can't stop me from offering this in divine currency for souls. Nothing can stop me. It's the most incredible moment of freedom. So even though what happened to me was a disaster on a human level, on a divine level it was completely different because I would never have got this insight. Do you know what I mean? And he's saying that no matter what happens to you, no matter who is responsible for it, you can still turn it into something incredibly beautiful for God. Okay. Oh, how my will and my love triumphed in the midst of my enemies. Now, that needs to be coloured as well. There's this disaster happening on the outside and inside he has complete triumph because neither his will nor his love was touched. What he wanted to do and what he decided to do with the scourging held. And he decided he was doing it out of love. He was not reacting to the people causing him pain. Do you see where you stay up at the divine will level? You don't come down to the level of passions. Now, there's nothing like a scourging for getting you back into passions and anger and reaction and resentment and blah, blah, blah. Now, he couldn't go into that because he was divine as well as human. But there's nothing like pain for really bringing you down. You know, and so it's during a time when you're experiencing pain that you can click into this incredible moment of Jesus and taste a little bit of his victory. They would strike me with scourges, but I would strike their hearts with my love. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Now, you heard me saying flinging the flames of love into their hearts. This is what he's doing. It's amazing. And with my will, I would chain them. They would prick my head with thorns and my love would turn on the light in their minds to make me known. You see, throwing the shafts of light into their minds. I just want you to hear where this comes from. They would open wounds on me and my love would heal the wounds of their souls. So my physical wounds was healing their spiritual wounds. Isn't that incredible? They gave me death and my love gave life back to them. This is truly divine. So much so that as I breathed my last on the cross, the flames of my love, you see, touching their hearts, forced them to prostrate themselves before me and confess me as true God. There's the triumph. You throw the flames of divine love into their hearts and it first of all cancels their hatred and their rebellion against God, gradually softens them down and sets the fire of love going in them. So I want to give you Matthew 27:54. Truly this man was a son of God. That's what Jesus is referring to. Never was I so glorious and triumphant as I was in my pains. Now people in the divine will have got to grasp that reality, because this is completely different to much lower spiritualities that allows you to get healed of absolutely everything and all pains are got rid of and you are trotting along like anybody else, but with a religious coat on the top of it. Whereas in the divine will, we actually look for identification with Jesus. Never was I so glorious and triumphant as I was in my pains during the course of my mortal life down here. Now, he said, in my likeness, I made the soul free in her will and her love. You see what he's getting at now? He wants the same thing from us at our level. So others might take possession of the external works of the creature, but no one can do so with her interior, with her will and her love. It doesn't matter what people say or do to you. They cannot touch these two if you stay fused in the divine will. So for that, I want to give you Romans 8, verses 38 and 39. And it begins with, if God is on your side, who can be against you? So if you stay fused, you stay in there, that all obstacles will have to fall down before you. No one can do so with her interior, with her will and with her love. I myself wanted her to be free in this, so that freely, not being forced, this will and this love might run towards me. And immersing herself in me, she might offer me the noblest and purest acts which a soul can give me, which are divine acts. And since I am free, and so is she, we might pour ourselves into each other. In other words, we fuse into each other. I fuse in him and he fuses in me, and together we run for souls. Isn't that wonderful? We run towards heaven, first of all, to love and glorify the Father. This is the very reason why we have this divine will mission. These are the two motivations we have. And these are the two things we want for Drumantine as well. To run towards heaven to glorify the Father and to dwell together with the Most Holy Trinity, but also to run towards the earth to do good for all souls. So there you have it, to give glory to God and to save souls. We run into the hearts of all to strike them with our love and chain them with our will. There's your shafts of light and love. And to make conquests of them. Greater dowry I could not give to the creature. But where? Where can the creature make greater display of this free will and free love? It is in suffering. It's the greatest place where you can do it. It is in suffering that love grows. The will is magnified. And as queen, the soul rules over herself. She binds my heart and her pains surround me like a crown. They move me to pity and I let myself be dominated. And whether you like it or whether you don't, you get your dose of suffering in some way. I cannot resist the pains of a loving soul, Jesus said. And I keep her at my side as a queen. Now, in that piece that I've just read, I want to give you Psalm 25, verse 4. And Psalm 119, verse 1, 6, 8. In the pains, the dominion of this soul is so great that they make her acquire noble, dignified, pleasing, heroic, disinterested ways similar to our ways. I'm just giving you English there. Is that okay? And the other souls compete to let themselves be dominated by this soul. The way we would say that in ordinary English is that when we know somebody is ahead of us, we don't mind listening to that person at all. In fact, we gain inspiration from somebody who is ahead of us. And the more the soul operates with me, is united with me, identifies herself with me, the more I feel absorbed in the soul. This is the possession of God. And this is the ultimate experience on this earth. When we come to take possession of God in our souls, then we have reached heaven on earth. Is that okay? So, as she thinks, I feel my thought being absorbed in her mind. As she looks, as she speaks, as she breathes, I feel my gaze, my voice, my breath, my action, my step, and heartbeat being absorbed in hers. She absorbs all of me. Now, this is called the possession of God. And while she absorbs me, she keeps acquiring my ways and my likeness. I keep gazing at myself in her continuously, and I find myself. So I want to give you 2 Corinthians 3:18. We become like that which we worship. And I want to give you Galatians 2:20 again. Because he says, I find myself, so I no longer live, Christ lives in me. So that's a very beautiful piece that simply requires you to sit with it and to deal with it prayerfully. Okay. We'll do a very short one, then we'll take a break. January the 10th, 1917, how sanctity is formed from little things. Jesus told me, my daughter, sanctity is formed from little things. So one who despises the little things cannot be holy. Anybody can move up and to the big event. It would be like someone who despises the little grains of wheat, which as many of them are united together, form the mass of wheat. And by neglecting to unite them, they would cause the necessary and daily nourishment of the human being to be lacking. In other words, the wheat makes bread. In the same way, one who neglected to unite many little acts together would cause the nourishment of sanctity to be lacking. And just as one cannot live without food, in the same way, without the food of the little acts, the true shape of sanctity, the mass sufficient to form real sanctity, would be lacking. I'm going to stop there for a few minutes.